Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Ms. Laura?
I'm great. How are you?
That was so unconvincing. I'm great.
I'm tired, but nobody wants to hear about that.
I know. I'm kind of dragging too. My mother would say, I'm dragging my little red wagon. That's how I am. We're both dragging. But you know what? We've already decided it would be a fabulous day for a parent or therapist to call in, because we want a call-in show today so that we can chit-chat about a real-life situation, which we're not doing today. So we're hoping a mom or a therapist calls. So if you're listening and you're thinking, I've been toying with calling, give us a call, and I will even give that number. It is, as soon as I find it, 1-718-766-4332. Give us a call. Okay, Laura, sorry.
All right, that sounds great. Let's pick up where we left off last week with talking about tips to maximize therapy sessions at home, or I think the way that we titled it on Blog Talk Radio is making therapy sessions at home work. Because sometimes just little alterations in things that a mom can do or that a therapist can do can totally make a difference in a child's participation or how well that therapy session flows. And last week we started with the previous tips. We're not going to review those, but if you missed that show, go back and listen for it. Or if you are a more visual person and want to take a look at that article, it's on my website at teachmetotalk.com. It's in the parenting section or the category, and the title is Tips for Parents for Maximizing Therapy Sessions at Home. And we got through the first seven last week, so today we're on number eight, and this is a big one for me. It's a big one. It's for moms, don't save all your questions for the last minute. And that's why when I – don't you have that happen sometimes where mom will ask – a bombshell of a question when you are headed out the door. Your shoes are on, you've got your bags all packed up, and you're saying, okay, see you next week, bye. And she says, wait, I have a question. And any time a mom says that, I just pause and I think, oh, no, I hope this is, can we switch the time or something fast rather than, do you think my son's autistic or something, you know, that, again, is a bombshell. So I really encourage moms to ask your questions at the beginning of the session. And I think sometimes moms are reluctant to do that because they think, okay, that's not really part of the therapy. This is my time. Really, your therapist's time is from the time she knocks on your door to the time that she closes the door. That's your visit. It's not she's going to work with my kid for an hour, and then I'm going to keep her for 20 more minutes asking questions. And sometimes with chatty moms, that just happens, and everybody stays over a little bit. But if you're like me,
some of us stay over more than others.
Well, I hardly ever. Well, I do stay over, but hardly. I do not stay over like you do. Let's just say I can't because I schedule my clients geographically, and everybody's about 15 minutes apart. And if I'm staying at somebody's house 20 minutes, that means that next appointment is going to be 20 minutes behind, and then I'm going to run behind all day long. And so it's not fair to your therapist, especially if you have a great therapist who tries to stay on schedule and who sees lots of children in a day. And so you have to really think about those questions are part of parent education, and that is a part of your child's therapy. Don't save that for the end and think that she's rude when she says, oh, we're going to have to talk about that next week. And what I really encourage moms to do, too, is if they have a big question for me that they think I might need to think about, or if they want more than just a little 10-second answer at the end of the session, they need to email me or leave me a voicemail a day or two ahead of time so that I can be prepared and we can talk about that. And even using an entire hour to address a mom's questions is a very productive way to use your child's therapy time. So please don't do that to your person and think that I can just chit-chat or even save these very important clinical questions with her for her till the end of the session, because that's not fair to her. And it's not fair to the next four or five families that she may be seeing in the day. So use your time and use your questions at the very, very beginning of the session. And again, if it's a long one, I think you should give her the courtesy of a day or two to prepare an answer. So call her, email her. Do you want to say anything about that,
yeah,
Kate?
Yeah, the other thing I would say to that is, depending on what the question is, but the other advantage, too, if they ask you when you get there initially, is sometimes it's something that relates to the child's progress or what we're seeing or what they're seeing. And if you have the time, we may be able to kind of, you know, address it as you're with the child that hour. And
yeah,
that's
great.
It gives you time to think about, you know, I mean, sometimes I'll give an answer, but then as the hour wears on, I've thought about it some more. I've, you know, kind of processed it a little while, and I may have more to add to that at the end. But if you have the whole hour to think about it, and also, like I said, and the other thing I'd add is don't only wait. I mean, don't another thing that is helpful to me and I like is when I first get to a house and parents will tell me, guess what Johnny said? You know, it's five new words. I like to know the new words because I'm just trying to get those new words while I'm there for that hour. And I think, you know, I always, and, you know, I know this is one of your things too, Laura, with very new talkers. Yeah, I always give them the opportunity for them to use the words that they have consistently with me. I mean, I'm going to start, I'm going to warm up with go and more and all those words that are easy for them or have become easier for them. And if they've got a new word, I want to know that too, because, you know, that's helpful and we can use it because repetition is key. We want to generalize those words. So if it's new, don't wait. Yeah, I hate that when I've maybe played with certain toys and had appropriate toys in the bag and then I'm done and mom says, oh, he said choo-choo, and he said, you know, he said cookie, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I wish I'd known that. I mean, yes, I can do it for next week, but it's helpful information because, you know, we would definitely work that. I mean, Laura and I can always work in cookie and choo-choo into any session, isn't it?
We don't already have the bag packed up. We can usually get it. Yeah, and it is helpful because you can you know, plan your activities kind of based on what a mom tells you about the door. And that's why I always hit the door saying, how was your week? How did it go? Do we have anything new? Mm-hmm. So that mom has an opportunity. Do you have any questions about last week or what? How did that work? If I know that there was a particular thing that I asked them to do, that's why I'm saying it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a mom will say, "I have a question, but I want to ask you at the end." And I say, "No, no, 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 no. We're doing questions now. Don't save it." Or the whole time I'll think, "What is she going to ask? What is she going to say? If she's really." Serious about that, I'll say, okay, we're going to play for 20 minutes, and then we're using the rest of the time for that question. And then they'll say, oh, it's not going to take that long. And I may say, oh, but I need to know this now. I can't even think about what I'm doing until I hear this question. And then they'll usually do it. If I'm thinking about a particular mom that I had a couple years ago that would do that, and I would say, I'm not doing one thing. I am not taking my shoes off. I'm not doing anything until I hear this question. Do you need to switch phones, Kate? Oh, you just
can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay,
I was good. Okay, good. Okay. All right, so that's a big tip. Don't save those questions for the last minute. Get those out at the very beginning, and it is part of your therapy time. It's not that she works with your child for 45 minutes or an hour, however long you've been allotted, and then your questions. Those things are included as part of the therapy session. Your therapist time is from the time she hits your door until the time she leaves. Okay.
So, Laura, you alluded to this, but it's certainly the case in the state of Kentucky. They have gone to a much more consultative model, and really according to the First Steps program, we're supposed to be consultants, not necessarily on-the-floor therapists, and you and I love on-the-floor therapy, and we do lots of it, and we think that it's critically important. We don't necessarily agree that we can just walk in and teach mommies how to do what we do on the spot, but
right, without showing.
Right. So we definitely are on the floor therapist, because I hear from other moms, from moms that sometimes they'll say, it happens even with speech therapy, which to me is a terribly hands-on, you're in the trenches with the baby. Of course, not you, Laura, but other therapists, they'll say, well, she just really kind of talked to me,
Right.
And we're not suggesting that it should look that way, but, as far as what our system says, they say it's the most important thing we do is talk to the parents. And there's a lot
exactly.
of, merit to that argument, because, after all, we're there an hour, 1 hour a week. So it is really important to talk to the parents about what they can do all those other hours. So,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, every week it needs to just, your entire session needs to be just one, your questions.
We would hate that. We love the implementation, or at least
right.
I do. That's
well, and
you,
I want to show a parent how to do it, and I could sit there and tell her all day long. It's like reading on the website. The main reason I did those DVDs is so parents could see how to do it, because I think it's a lot easier for some people, and I would be included in that, to see someone implement a therapy strategy, especially if it's a mom and this is or a dad and this is totally new to them, and maybe they're not terrific with knowing how to play and be lots of fun and how to elicit words at the same time. And so it's so helpful to see that. So I can't imagine being a therapist that just talk to mom and dad. I don't think that would be that one, certainly we do that here on the podcast and people read on the website and all of that. But I think seeing has a big, big impact on a family. So if you're a therapist listening and you're not one to really do lots of direct treatment because of maybe what your state program says, I'm not telling you to do that either. I think you need to model and show mom and dad how to get those words and how to be playful and how to get that social interaction and how to work on receptive language and how to cue sounds that a child isn't getting when you're far enough along in the therapy process. I'm not one to just tell a parent how to do it. I'm doing the tell him, show him, help him model even with parents. tell them how to
implement
the therapy technique.
Buzz line there, huh?
Yeah, you tell them the therapy strategy, you show them how to do it with their own child, and a lot of times you think it's going to work beautifully with a child, even a child you've seen for a long time, and you think, okay, we're going to do something new today, this should work great, and it doesn't. And so as a therapist, you have to be able to say, okay, well, let's tweak it this way, or let's try this, or let's do this. And so you don't know about those things unless you actually try to implement those strategies while you're there and show a parent how it's going. Or a parent might say to me, I just can't get him to do it like you do. And I'll say, okay, let me see what you're doing. You do it. Let me tell you. And then I can stand behind them and, kind of coach them from the side and say, try this. Not all parents are up for that. But if you feel like there's something that you're really, really trying to do, when I did more feeding, I did that a lot, is watch the parents feed a baby. And I would say, okay, let's try this. And, then you're really coaching and you're really critically problem-solving.
Because it is the parent feeding them, and typically kids are the most comfortable with their parents. The play part, it does. We sometimes, like you said, we may think we have a great plan, and it may work beautifully with the child before or after this child, but for whatever reason, that day it's not working. So we're troubleshooting and learning as we go, too.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you have fine-tuned the whole process, and I do think it's a great process, but we're still figuring it out because every child is different.
Exactly. But unless a therapist is really trying those things and knowing a particular child's responses, or if you're a mom and you say, okay, he doesn't do this for me, leave your inhibitions in the other room and say, I want to show you how he does this with me, and maybe you can come up with some better ideas for me. Show me what I'm doing wrong on this, because that's why we're there, is to help you so that you can take those ideas and use those, like Kate said, all the other hours in the week, because really it doesn't matter how great a kid does with his therapist if he's not able to carry over those things to his daily routines. He's not going to make that much progress if you don't really get in there and know how to do those same things and elicit those same words and sounds and really get that communication going and really have him following directions all week long. So you want to do that, and again, if it's not going very well for you, and especially if you're a mom who that you're taking your child into a center for services and it's you don't feel like you can carry over any of the things she's doing, you need to talk to her about that. You need to say, hey, listen, today's session, or if you're not comfortable with this today, but next week it needs to be you teaching me how to do it because I am struggling at home and it is not going very well for me, and I really need you to help me learn how I can do this better. And some therapists are really comfortable coaching parents like that. I love it when a mom says that to me, but I think other people, other therapists that aren't maybe used to that hands-on approach, especially if your child is getting services in a clinical setting, might need a week or two to not be nervous around you or really come up with a better plan with things that you can do for home. So that would be, again, something you would want to talk to her about and then have her help you and show you so that you can implement those things better at home all week long. Okay, anything else about that, Kate?
No, I think I've contributed enough on that subject. Ready to move on.
Are you hanging up?
No.
I'm teasing. Okay. All right, number 9, be respectful of her schedule. And again, we strive so hard in family-friendly programs like early intervention, you know, in our program, our state is Kentucky, it's called First Steps, to make it a really family-friendly program. But sometimes a service coordinator or a parent will mistakenly think that that means that they make every decision right down to I'm saying to them, you know, I don't really anymore even say what time is good for you. I say, I could come Monday at 10 o'clock or Wednesday at 3 o'clock. And give a parent a choice that way. And so for therapists listening, if you're having a real hard time with scheduling, that's something you can do. But for a parent, you don't really call your pediatrician's office and say, hey, listen, I want to bring him in for his immunizations, and I'm going to come next Tuesday at 10 o'clock, okay? You don't do that. You know, you can't do that, especially to a therapist who has a pretty good reputation and is really busy. You know, so you need to be flexible with your scheduling. Sometimes, you know, I don't want to go at a time that's terrible for a parent. Like if I'll, you know, say a time that's right in the middle of nap time, I don't want to do that. But at the same time, with someone who's really good, you are going to have to be a little flexible in when you say that she can come. Even if that means that you might rearrange your day a little bit. You might put him down earlier for a nap. You might let him go down a little later for a nap. You might move lunchtime around. Even for the other kids, you know, you have to be flexible with your scheduling with that. And the other thing is you really need to schedule all your other appointments around that time, too. If you know that Wednesday at 10 o'clock has been your standing speech therapy time for a long time, and 2 or 3 weeks in a row you have something on that Wednesday at 10 o'clock, don't be too surprised if your therapist doesn't have that slot available anymore a few weeks later. So you really need to be cognizant of that. In some states where people work directly for the state, they get paid anyway for that hour. But in most states, when you don't keep a therapy appointment with your therapist, she doesn't get paid that hour. You know, we're paid by the visit. So you want to think about that as well. And again, I'm not saying that you have to take anything or that your time is not valuable. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying please be flexible and respectful of her schedule, especially if she's busy and
well, you know what, Laura,
you know, has certain
saying
ways.
If they're really good. And I'll go a step further. Speech therapists are really busy, at least in Kentucky, and I assume that's
right.
At least nationwide with, you know.
I think so, based on
the,
what the stuff I get from the website,
yeah. Kids on the spectrum with their, you know. So even the bad ones are booked. I hate to tell you, but they're all booked. And, yeah, we have to definitely, you know, accommodate the parents to the best of our ability, and I know we both do, and we do stay away from those really bad times, but there are only so many 10 o'clock spots in a week. You know, a lot of parents, oh, can you come at 9:30 or 10? It's like, well, you know, those are full. And we're always adding and dropping or discharging kids because they turn three or they become age appropriate, and we cut them loose. So, I wish there were, 20 10 o'clock spots in a week. That would be perfect.
Me too. But it doesn't work that way, and I don't believe God's going to go make some new days just for us to accommodate that. So,
Right.
You have to be flexible with that. And sometimes, like, I schedule geographically, and so a parent might say, can you come on Wednesday? And I'll say, actually, I'm only over here on Mondays. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And so you can just, if you have a therapist that your child is connected with and that you are connected with and that you feel like it's a good match, do everything you can to make that work.
Day and time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think most parents recognize that. I mean.
Oh, I do too. I do too. Occasionally you'll get somebody that, really doesn't understand that. Or I'll open my book and they'll go, how many kids do you see in a day? And then kind of realize, I don't really have, these appointment times are kind of slim pickings here. I better take either that Monday slot or that Wednesday slot she offered me and not really go harassing her about Thursday at 2 o'clock.
One of the many benefits to your additional adventures, back when you were just a speech therapist, not everybody knew how talented you are. And now with your DVDs and your book and you're going to be doing seminars, or what do you call them? Conventions.
Conferences, whatever.
Conferences. then, now people know you because they've been to your website or they've ordered.
Right, but I'm just talking about Joe Blow therapist, too.
Right.
I mean, 15 years ago.
Right.
Seeing kids. And it still kind of mattered if you're.
Well, like I said, even the bad ones are busy.
Yeah. You can't always rearrange, so just be flexible and respectful of her schedule, too. Okay, and I think we've already talked about this one, number 10. I think we talked about it kind of in the context of another one, but help your child love therapy. Say, Kate's coming today. Aren't you so excited? You get to play. Make it so much fun and get really excited about it so that your child gets really excited about therapy too. Try to stay positive. Even if it seems like you're off to a rocky start with a therapist, cut her a break. Try to stay positive and make it positive for your child. Sometimes parents will, especially at the beginning, will say, do you want to play with her today? And I just nearly jump across a couch to want to put my hand over mom's mouth when she says that, because I'm going to say, don't give him a choice if he wants me to play with him or not. I'm staying for the hour, and yes, we are going to play. So don't say things like that. Really make it that she's coming and you're going to have so much fun. And, if a kid's having a bad time, a mom might say, do you just want her to go home, thinking that he's going to say no? And sometimes kids say yes, and I think, I'm not going home. I've only been here 15 minutes. No, we're finishing this hour. So don't sabotage by saying those little things, because it does make a difference. And you really, from a behavioral perspective, you really don't want to give your 2-year-old or 3-year-old that much control either, for him just to be able to say, I don't want to do it today. Mm-hmm. And while we do everything we can to make it so much fun that they want to play with us every day and want that to be one of their highlights of their little weeks, you really don't want to shift that control. And if you are routinely having some trouble with your child, it's just not connecting, you may have to think about getting a new person that would be better connected with your child, or that you have a better relationship with. Or you might try to change the date and time if you can, or any other little variable that might make it easier. But do everything you can to help your child love therapy, because that goes a long, long way in helping it be more positive, in helping him participate more, and in ultimately helping him get better.
Absolutely. Normally, my primary goal initially is to have a kid learn to really love therapy,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anything they can do to help, and we talked about additional ones last week about minimizing the distractions and visiting the older siblings if that's a problem, or, you know, anything that is going to help that child be ready to hit the floor playing when we get there. And normally that happens pretty quickly once they understand it is fun.
Yes, I keep wanting to do that. And again, if you want to take a look at those tips, that article is called Tips for Parents for Maximizing Therapy Sessions at Home, and it's at teachmetotalk.com under the parenting category. Okay, let's move on and talk about things that therapists can do. And I still think this is helpful for moms to hear, so don't turn off the show yet. But and I know that we say this every week, but I think things that make pediatric therapists really, really successful is the number one strategy that I recommend is play, play, play. And when you're tired of all that, play some more. You have to play. It has to be so, everything you do has to be play-based. And you have to be able to work that theory and all those really fancy strategies you learned in grad school and that you've read about and that you learned about from going to different seminars. You want to be able to take that and put that, especially with toddlers, into context with play. It is not enough, like Kay was talking about at the beginning, to sit on a couch with mom or dad and say, these are the things I want you to do. You have to show the parents how to do that in the context of play with some super cool fun toys that that makes a kid want to stay with you. And you have to become their favorite playmate for at least, you know, the time that you're there. And to do that, you make yourself really, really fun. Like we talked about a couple weeks ago, get some great toys. If you're not sure what I mean by that, you know, just any little thing won't do. You can't really take
same book and puzzle and Duplo blocks that you've taken for a year. Move on.
Get some new stuff if you need some ideas.
Tutus and bubbles.
Yeah, and some balloons. Pick up a dollar pack of balloons. You can have a riot with balloons for an hour. But pick up some new toys and some new ideas. On the website, there's a section called Toys. You can read through there for my favorites, and a lot of those are Kate's favorites too because we have long conversations. Kate, was it, what day was that, Kate, that you were in Toys R Us and you said, I'm
yesterday.
Sick of my toys.
Yesterday.
Boy, it seems like a lot longer than that.
It does, but it was yesterday, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said, I'm at Toys R Us, and I am getting some new toys. What have you bought lately that's really, really cool? And so we talked for,
oh,
I bet 20 minutes.
I've got to get some new toys. I'm so bored with the same toys. My kids are okay, but I'm bored. I need something new to play with. Yeah, so, and I did. I bought some a new Play-Doh set that looked really cute. I haven't used it yet, but
I was going to ask if you played with it today.
No, it's, you know, but I'll tell our listeners, in case you have a Playboy lover at home, I mean, not Playboy, Play-Doh lover at home. Excuse me.
Sorry.
Freudian slip there.
Are you laughing?
It is.
We need an edit.
Gotta get this out. It is a new Play-Doh set. I had not seen it, and it has like three canisters of Play-Doh, but then it has like little accessories that make your chunks of Play-Doh vehicles. There's a car, and there's a helicopter, and there's a choo-choo. I mean, pretty much, you know, that we could definitely play with that for an extended period. It was cute. I'm excited to use it, but I have not yet.
Well, I can't wait to see how that goes so I can decide if I want to buy that as well.
I can already tell it's a keeper. It's going to be on the top 10 list next year on your website.
Well, good.
You're going to have to put it
I'll
to
just
the...
Go ahead and pick that up. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks cute. It really does.
You know, and as a therapist, too, you need lots of toys like that, but you need other ideas so that if everything isn't working, you can have plan B and plan C and plan D and really be pretty skilled at coming up with things on the spot. I've started, and this is in my new manual, Teach Me to Play With You, I started making paper airplanes with kids. And we've talked about that, Kate.
Uh-uh.
I
did. You're holding out.
I did it with a little boy because he just kept wanting to write on my paper.
I have actually done it before. It's been a while, but I've done it. Yeah, that's a hit.
It's a hit, and it's so simple and so easy to do. And even if the kid tears it up, well, voila, I pull out a new sheet of paper and we start over, you know, if it won't fly. And it's another activity that they pretty much have to have adults help with because 2- and 3-year-olds aren't great at getting an airplane to fly on their own, but they love to watch it. And I've been doing that with a little boy that I see, and then I started doing it with some other kids, but I've been doing that a lot, and that's fun, and that's kind of an idea on the fly when things aren't working in your bag or
No pun intended, on the fly.
I didn't even think about that. That's how tired I am.
Don't
can't even process
husband.
It.
He's the king of the pun. Well, it also, you know, we have certain, basic principles that we apply, and one of them is, and this holds pretty much true, that kids, and I'm going to be sexist, I know you try not to do the boy-girl thing, but I think it is almost universally true that little boys just love things that go. And I talk to parents that a lot about, you know, what words are going to get this kid, the words that relate to things that go, because what boy doesn't love a ball, and then a car, then a choo-choo, and the creme de la creme is the helicopter. So
yeah.
Work your way up to the helicopter, to the chopper, as I tend to call them. But, you know, you just kind of applied that basic principle. Kids love things that go. He's kind of distracted by this paper. I'm going to, you know, fold it in 2 seconds and make it fly. And, wow, you got him. And, Laura, you were saying your number one rule is play, play, play. And I think that's a great number one rule. But I would say, if I were making my list of the things that therapists could do to, you know, not just specifically parents or anybody working with language delayed kids, but if we're talking specifically to the specific audience of therapists, I would say change it from play, play, play. My terminology would be more engage, engage, engage.
Exactly.
Because I think a lot of therapists don't really engage the kid. You know, they narrate their play, they present toys, and then the kid may or may not like the toy, but what has to be the primary goal, as you're playing, you have to engage them. So
I agree with that so much, because you'll see sometimes, you know, we'll see a child at daycare or preschool setting, and you'll see another therapist, and you'll, if you don't know her, you think, well, I know what you're doing in there. And it does look pretty darn boring because the kid is sitting playing with the toy
therapist is kind of sitting back and every
watching.
Once in a while saying, truck, you know.
Let me just phone it in from the car.
Yeah.
Let me
go.
Just the car.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, not even that. Go. And I'm thinking, well, he couldn't give a lick if you're in even in the room. You know,
right.
He's not at all. And, you know, I'm not going to say that sometimes it's not a struggle. We deal with kids who engagement, social reaction or social response is a big problem. Not always.
Right.
Some of our kids are engaged the minute they see us walk in the door. Other kids, we're practically doing bat flips to get them to respond. But we do them. Uh-oh. If I seem a little distracted, I have painters all over my house.
Oh, no.
And I go to windows, there's somebody there looking in. It's really...
That's creepy.
And I'm going to have to get off for a minute, Laura, because the painter...
Okay, that's fine.
Off me, and then
that's
all
fine.
Right.
Go ahead. That sounds good. That's fine.
Okay.
But Kate's right. You do have to engage a child, and that is more than just narrating what he's doing when he's sitting playing with that train. And again, like I said, you could have called it in from your cell phone in the parking lot if that's all you're going to do is narrate what he's paying attention to. So you really do want to be involved and in play. The second tip that we say for therapists and for moms is to exude warmth and joy when you interact with your child. And I know that that's a stretch for a lot of parents 100% of the time, and it's a stretch sometimes for therapist when you're on your fifth kit of the day and it's 95 degrees and you've got, you know, the water heater's broken at home and your car needs gas and blah, 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 blah. But you really do have to make that child feel like he or she is the most important person in the world during your time there. And we talked about this Kate and I did a couple of weeks ago about making the child feel really, really important, and that is so important for all of us to remember when we work with children. So you're going to want to look at them and make your eyes twinkly and really be excited and happy to be with them at least some of the time, if not most of the time that you're there. And sometimes that change in attitude alone can make a child who previously seemed aloof and didn't really care one way or the other whether you were there or not, it really does pull them in and make them want to be with you and make them pay attention. And again, it's more than you kind of calling in your therapy session or narrating for them, but you do want them looking at you and laughing and smiling and really wanting to participate and have that reciprocal back and forth exchange. So do your best to exude that warmth and joy when you're interacting with the child that you see. One thing that I recommend to therapists that they do too is to videotape themselves with children in sessions, and then you can really take a look at the things that you're doing that you might not even be aware of. Sadly, I think some of us get on autopilot and don't really think about some of the things that we're doing. We're not realizing that our facial expressions aren't looking very happy, that we're not looking like we're really paying attention to what's going on. We're not always 100% tuned in, or we're thinking about something else. And it may even be something else clinically. You may be sitting there thinking, wow, what kind of phonological process is that? What sound is he using? How in the world is he using that substitution? So it may not even be that you're thinking about something that's necessarily off topic, but your appearance isn't that so that it looks like that you're to that kid that you're really playing with him, or even that parent who's observing. So you want to really analyze yourself, and one way to do that is with videotaping. So that might be a good idea for some therapists to do. It might also be great for some moms and dads to do. If you think you're doing a pretty good job of playing, but you feel like, gosh, he's just not really into me. Sometimes being objective and filming can make you see things and notice things about yourself, and you think, oh, I could do that differently, and that would make him want to engage with me a little more. And again, that's one of the reasons that I did the whole DVD series, is so that you can see somebody else do it, but watching yourself do it takes it a step further, and you can kind of see some things there that may make it easier for your child to engage and stay with you and want to play. The next recommendation is that you talk at or just above your child's current language level most of the time during your direct interactions. So usually we all know that many children, or all typically developing children, or most of them, understand at least a little bit more than they can say. And there are exceptions to this rule, like for children who are on the autism spectrum can sometimes say a lot more than they understand, but usually it's the other way around. And so for a child that's nonverbal, you really don't want to spend lots of your time talking in full sentences. You want to break it down so that you are talking at or just beyond his language level most of the time when you're doing direct interactions. Therapists mess this up all the time, and parents, it is so hard to teach yourself how to do, so that if you've got a nonverbal child, you're really going to want to stick to play sounds and single words. And again, you're talking just above his current expressive language level. If you have a child who's currently saying single words, you want to use a lot of single words and no more than two or three word phrases, so that you're not, again, talking in something that he has no shot at being able to imitate. And so, again, you want to remember to talk at or just above his current language level. For most of us that work in early intervention, that means that we don't need to be talking in these long sentences, unless, of course, we're kind of talking to mom and dad and telling them what we're doing and what we're seeing and why we're trying what we're doing. But in those direct interactions with the kid, you really want to keep it at or just a teeny bit above where he currently is for expressive language. The reason is you want to be able to say things that he has a shot of imitating. And even when you have a kid that's nonverbal that has pretty good comprehension, lots of us make the mistake of going ahead and talking in sentences because that's where his receptive language is. But again, you miss some big, big therapeutic opportunities when you keep your language too complex. So you want to try to remember that. So if it's a kid's nonverbal, you're going to be using lots of little play sounds. By that, I mean those exclamatory words like yay and whoa and whoops and uh-oh and wow and those little things. And then and lots of single words, you know, lots of nouns, lots of single verbs. And then for kids, when they're at that single word level, bump it up and use some short phrases. And when they're at the phrase level, then you can think about some short sentences. Again, and I'm talking about that time during direct interaction. Okay, number four, repetition is the mother of skill, or as your mother would say, practice makes perfect. A child has to have an opportunity to practice new things before those things become in their repertoire of skills. So I don't really want to talk a lot about neurology here, but with neuroscience, when we are making when we're learning something new in our brains, we think about that as a motor plan. And I try to think about that, and this is from Lisa Jane Miller's book, Sensory Kids. You think about when your kid's learning how to say a new word, he has to establish a pathway for that word, and to kind of break that down into an everyday analogy. Oh, I think Kate's back. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And so we're talking about how repetition is so important and why that's so important, and I'm using that motor plan analogy. When your child learns a new word, you think about, you know, and again, don't call me if you're a neurologist to tell me how wrong I am on this. Let me just go with my example that I know and understand. If you were thinking about a kid learning a new word, and it's got to get from his brain to his little mouth, you know, he's got to send that impulse to be able to say the word. At the beginning, the path is bumpy. It's like a path with grass over it and rocks, and it is bumpy. It has not been traveled before. You think about a cross-country path. Then as he says that word over time, then it's like the lawnmower has gone through. Then it's like the bulldozer has gone through. Then it turns into a little, kind of gravelly driveway. And then after he's used that word over and over and over and over and over, it is the newest, most advanced, most modern, super interstate, new construction. You know, it is slick. That pathway is
the Autobahn.
Yeah, there you go. I've never been to Europe, but there you go.
I know what the Autobahn is.
Me too. I'm glad I knew that word. So you think about it like that. So your child has to have the opportunities to really, really use those words. So again, that's why we're cueing the same words. Like your example, Kate, at the beginning of the show, when you were saying, we get a kid going at the beginning. We don't start with new words. We start with words that he can already say and words that he already knows or signs that he's already done in previous sessions, because that gets him going. It gets that little brain working. It gets those pathways activated. So that's what we mean by repetition.
We get the verbal motor running.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've also likened it to stretching. You know, you've got to kind of start with the easy and then work up to the hard. Because if you hit the ground with hard, he's probably going to hit the door.
Exactly. So you have to really kind of pull him in, do some familiar stuff, and then when you get him warmed up, which is usually 10 or 15 minutes in, that's when you kind of start on your newer targets. And then don't you find yourself, then you go back to something that's a little easier. And
yeah, because we've worn them out. We've got to do the cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And you might do that several little kind of cycles throughout the whole session. Some kids, once they get going, they're great. I have two or three kids right now that at 40 minutes, they are done. Their eyes are glazed over. They're throwing themselves back, you know, like, oh, and not a tantrum or anything. They're just finished. I have one little boy that runs laps now when he gets to the point that he's just had it. And so, you know, we might have done that whole little build up and then play, 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 where we're working on signs and words and understanding and na, 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 na. And then at 40 minutes, they've just totally had it. And I don't really push past that point, especially in the first few months of therapy with kids. I use the rest of our session to really talk to to mom about what we've done that day, how she can carry that over into daily routines, and whatever else we need to talk about. I think my point was supposed to be, though, talking about repetition. Oh, about the cycles. But we might have kind of worked up to, in that whole 40-minute period where he's super engaged, you know, repeated the same little set of words, you know, his little 8 or 10 words that we're using lots and lots of times, and not just one time in an activity. You know, I might say ready, set, it says prompt for go 30 times when I'm there in an hour. And again, you do that to make that word a word that he owns and a word that he can use. It doesn't just apply when Laura's little swirly racetrack, when we're doing that. We use it with the choo-choo trains. We use it when we're racing. And we use it with balloons if we're going to shoot the balloons across the room. We use it with lots of different things. So you really want to be sure that you're building those opportunities for repetition into your therapy sessions and as a mom into your regular day with your kids. If your kid says juice, you don't want him just to say it when he first gets the sippy cup of juice. You want to give him lots and lots of chances to use that word. So you're going to take the sippy cup from him. You know, if he throws it down, don't just put it back on the high chair or hand it back to him. Have him say it again before he gets it. So you're really building those opportunities to practice into your play routines or even your daily routines.
Because really, at the end of the day, I would say for 0 to 3-year-olds, that's how you fix their language, is you set up scenarios and opportunities for them to use it. I think sometimes parents think we have this magic wand, and we come in and wave it, and then child starts talking. Well, if in fact that happens, it's because we've given them lots and lots, and taught mom and dad how to give them lots and lots and lots of opportunities for them to use it and to do anything
right
that we can do to make it any easier. And we certainly have our bag of tricks, but can't fix it if it's not working, if it's not running, you know.
Right, exactly.
Got to get them talking. So, and once you do, make sure that the repetition is built into your routines. And I think that's our kind of core argument for why we start with a little handful of key core signs and words, because those words are words that they can use all day, pretty much no matter what they're doing.
Yeah, and they're really, really functional. And to put it in therapist terminology, and for a parent, again, it means, like Kate said, they can use it all day. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right.
Keep on with your thoughts. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I interrupted you.
That's okay. No, that was it. But, and I have to, you know, I say I'm still a work in progress in my speech therapy career because I'm a DI, but having done it for the last 10 years, I'm getting more comfortable with it. But one of the things I do have to remind myself kind of on a regular basis, and it's, you know, is repeat it, multiple opportunities for a child to hear the same thing, to see the same sign, hear me say the same word, play the same basic way with the toy, not if they're not interested, but as long as I see their eyes twinkling, keep it up. Keep it
right,
going.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to remind myself of this, when I am new with a kid, and he might have no words, but we start to get some words. I keep notes in every session about what a kid says. Sometimes nobody can read it but me, but I am writing down what they say. And I started doing this a long time ago, and I love it. When I start really reminding myself that I want to keep cueing a certain word, I keep little marks about how many times he said that word. So that I'll tell myself, okay, I've only gotten him to say more one time, you know, and then I might cue it 6 or 7 more times, and he says it again, and I'll put another little slash mark. That's just a little data-keeping thing to keep me remembering, okay, I'm going to get as many little marks here, as many little tallies as I can beside every one of these words, because that means that I've done a good job of cueing the same word over and over and over again so that he does get that opportunity for practice.
We have to go from no road to the Audubon. So.
Right. And so he needs lots and lots. And sometimes I'll say to a mom, oh, God, or, you know, he said a lot today. And she'll say, yeah, but it was only like three different words. And I'll, you know, talk about this, about how important that is and why that is important and why he might not be ready yet to move on to, you know, 10 different words in the session. We're just going to be happy with three words plus maybe one or two new signs and one or two new little word imitations. And he might not have been able to imitate it more than one or two times that week. But when we come back, and hopefully mom has gotten it a couple of times, that word might bump up to be included in that little set of three or four words that he used over and over and over again. So look at your frequency of words, not just your number of different words as a therapist too, so that you're really making sure that you give them enough repetitive practice so that they can really, as I like to say, own a word and really right. be able to use it spontaneously. You know, and that the next one is about imitation, how important imitation is. It's imitation really is the sincerest form of flattery, and it's the only way any of us learn anything. We learn everything, even as an adult, by imitating what we've seen someone do. Sometimes it might be that we've read directions, but mostly, you know, we learn how to drive by imitating what we've seen a driver do. I learn how to fix my hair a new way by imitating what the magazine says or what the hairstylist has done. You know, even as an adult, we imitate. And it's so important for a child when he's first learning to talk to learn how to imitate or repeat the sounds or words that you've used. Some children are not ready at the beginning to learn to verbally, or they just can't verbally imitate anything. So we start with imitating gestures, and we've talked a lot about that on previous shows. One way to try to get a child to learn to imitate your actions is to imitate what he does. With some kids that works, with some kids it doesn't. So you really have to think about motor actions that he can already do, like clapping, and you start to clap and see if he'll clap that you've already done it. I like to do raising my arms, whether we're playing a game like So Big, or I play that little ah, boom, where I raise my hands up in the air and say ah while I'm raising my hands up and then slam my hands down on the couch or table while I'm saying boom. Kids love that game.
No, I don't do that one. How does that make me? I like that.
I don't know. You better read that book I gave you last week.
I have to go to that section and check it out. I think that, well, what I like about it is so simple. And I use boom a lot, but not
adding the
boom. I like that.
Yeah. And it's adding that new little verbal step. Mm-hmm. And even if a kid can't do that part yet or can't do both of those, it is a very good attention getter, especially for those runners, you know,
right.
And you've chased them and
they're
chased them and chased them.
While they're booming and they're communicating and engaged. I love it.
Right.
I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a great one. And I do it when I am sitting on the floor, again, right beside a couch or table, usually when I'm taking my rest break after we have done Ready, Set, Go, and I have chased and they've flown and I've swung them around and all those things, and I'm sitting there thinking, I got to do something to catch my breath.
Or I'm going to be right here on the floor.
Yeah, here we go.
I know what
so
makes
that's,
you think of that. Yeah.
What?
Oh, I know what
What'd
makes
you say?
You think of that game, because you're thinking,
yeah.
Oh, boom.
Yeah, I'm about to fall over here. But it's a great one to do, even if the kid is not able to imitate the words yet, because when I see him trying to lift his little hands up, or usually it doesn't start like that. Usually it starts with them patting the couch or patting the table for the boom part, and then they start to do their little hands up. But imitating those kinds of things are so important, especially if you have a kid that will not sign, a kid that's not signing yet, that doesn't get that whole gestural imitation piece. Teach them to play some little games like that. And again, if you need more ideas about those little things, that new manual that I just did is full of that, and it's full of step-by-step-by-step instructions on how to elicit lots of those things. So if you're a new therapist, or even if you're an old therapist and you think, gosh, I need some new tricks here, or she's talking about something that I never do, that would be a great tool for you to use in your practice. And as a mom, I think sometimes all of us need little checklists. I'll think, okay, I know you want me to play with them and you want me to do these little games, but, okay, I've already clapped and that's all I got. I don't know what else you're talking about. I need some specific ideas in black and white. that's a great tool for you to be able to use and kind of flip through. I got a comment on the website from a mom who ordered that last week, and it went out, or she ordered it when it was out in pre-sale, and so she got it, you know, one of the first ones that were shipped, and she sent it back and said she likes it. She's a mom that lives in South Carolina, and she has three children, and all of them have autism, apraxia, or autism and apraxia. And so she has lots of therapists in her house, and she, with her youngest one that's 23 months old, she has ABA therapy going on plus traditional speech therapy. And she said that the thing that she is most excited about with this book is that you can copy those pages, and she doesn't have to give them the whole book. She could just copy like one game at a time and hand it to her ABA therapist and say, this is what I want you to do today. This is the game I've been playing with, and she likes that format, and she likes how it's written out. And for ABA people...
And then we'll be able to tap the table.
What? Oh, they won't be able to play at the table? Yeah.
Table. Yeah.
But the thing is, you can work those little play routines even into that really structured kind of therapy, and you've already kind of got that social component going too, which is my big thing about ABA, is that, okay, where's the turn-taking part? Where's the part where I'm smiling and he's smiling and we're connected and we're all both doing the same thing and the whole joint attention? But she said that she liked that because, again, it's going to give her ABA therapist some new ideas for
great.
Some
and
things to make it a little bit more social.
And fairly measurable if they
make
that part of their, you know, goal or their program or whatever, then they can see how they come close on that. But, yeah, I'm just knocking ABA therapy, which actually I think there's a certainly it provides something that our brand of therapy does not, and some kids really benefit greatly. But sometimes ABA, and I think old-fashioned, kind of outdated, antiquated ABA, they kind of got really, really stuck on little tasks or point to this, and it was very rigid and not social at all. So I just think it's ironic that she's handing the ABA therapist your play with me.
I loved it. That was the best thing anybody could have said that to me. Yeah.
I know, but it's just funny, too. I mean, it's like, oh, that's hilarious. But good, I hope they do it because, and I do think that newer, more progressive kind of applied ABA, they have figured out that the social piece is important, and they are making efforts to include that. But old-fashioned ABA wasn't really about a social connection. It was about perform a task, reward it, and move on.
Right. And we still want kids to perform and still want to be sure that they get the reward, but you want to be sure that the social interaction is a big piece of that and that they are looking for you to make sure, like I was talking about earlier, that you are responding to them, and that's just as important as them responding to you, and it's that back and forth interaction that you're really, really going for. And, you know, social interaction really is the foundation for communication. And even if a kid is talking, I know when I give this example, you don't like this example, Kate, but even if a kid is talking and is echolalic, it's not communicative. It's not, and that's not the majority of kids that we see, but it really doesn't matter to me that she can sing her ABCs or that he can, you know, sing a big song or anything if he's not able to use real words to ask for milk or to understand when mom says, go get your shoes. Or, you know, it doesn't, the kid's ability to talk really sometimes has nothing to do with him being able to communicate. So you want to be sure that social piece is kind of is the foundation for your therapy sessions with a kid if you're a therapist, or with your play routines, if you're a mom. And sometimes a mom will say to me, I'll think at the end of the session, oh, my gosh, that was the best hour ever. He did great. And a mom might say, yeah, but he was kind of quiet. And I'm thinking, well, who cares? Because he was smiling and he was laughing and he was really with me. And, you know, today we put the potato head pieces on the potato head. I'm sorry.
I was saying, especially for the spectrum-y or on the spectrum kind of kids.
Sure.
I certainly want them to talk, but I would so take an hour where a kid was engaged and a kid was responsive and a kid, you know, was right there with me and twinkling the whole hour over the hour where, yeah, they said 25 words, but it was all totally echolalic, or it was
right.
some script from Diego, or, you
right.
know, they
exactly.
launched into EIEIO, and we had no farm animals in sight, you know.
Right. It was not related at all. And so you do want to keep that, especially if your child is challenged socially, you want to keep that as your first and foremost goal beyond any other thing that you're working on. Dr. Greenspan, in all of his books, really talks about how important that is. So that's a great resource if you're a therapist or a mom and need some additional background information on that. I think we have gotten to the end of this hour. We did not get all the way through this article today, but I think next week we're going to switch. Did you hear our executive producer laugh when I said that?
No.
Okay. Johnny let out a big cackle.
About
that
what?
We didn't get through. That we
oh.
didn't get through with the article.
Every uh-huh. week, without
every week,
we worry that we won't have enough to talk about, and every week we don't even get through half. So that's
I know.
To tend to go on, but it's so fun to be able to talk about things that are, you know, everyday experience
right.
for us and things that, you know, be able to help other people, whether they're the parent or the therapist. If we would love feedback from anybody as far as a therapist or a parent, if you've tried some of these or you have additional ideas, we are always open to good ideas.
Absolutely. And next week, I think what we're going to do is shift gears and answer some questions that I've gotten over the past few weeks. And I would love for you to leave me those as comments on the website if you have a new one, some new things that you would like for Kate and me to talk about on the show. And, again, you can leave that on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and we will be more than happy to take a stab at that. Or just call us. Call us directly next week because we would love to hear from you. And our show is always on Thursdays, 2 o'clock Eastern Time. So we hope that you'll join us next week and call us as well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you later. Bye.